Who's died by suicide, two patients who died by suicide. So helping in any way that I can to bring the voices of youth out into the open is so important, because here in Oregon, suicide is the eighth leading cause of death, and it is the second leading cause of death for ages 15 to 34.
And the question we're very excited about, where can we see the art submissions by Sydney and Finley and the other participants?
Yeah. If you go to the Hold On Campaign website, www.holdoncampaign.org, go to the menu item Create Resilience, and on the drop down, you'll see 2025 Youth Art Contest winners.
Just want to say thank you so much, both of you, all three of you, for being here. Finley, Sydney, and Dr. Kaufman, thank you so much for the time. We've been speaking to our folks here, Dr. Diane Kaufman, the founder of Hold On, Campaign for Suicide Prevention, and two of the winners of the recent Youth Create Resilience Art Contest, Sydney Chen and Finley Walls. We've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Terrence Burns. Stick around for Labor Radio up next.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online voting is open now through the annual meeting at kboo.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's KBOO's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/board25.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you so much for joining us. We would first just like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And before we get started, I want to let you all know that we are in the final week of KBOO's KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, focusing on uplifting community voices and letting the silenced be heard. KBOO has been on the air for 55 years, making us one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the longest standing media institutions here in Portland. And we've been able to remain a commercial-free, volunteer-powered resource for this community because of the support from amazing people like you. And now, more than ever, we turn to our community to keep the mission alive. So if you can, please help us reach our $45,000 fundraising goal by becoming a member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support. So today for the episode, we're diving into California's AB 288, which is a legislative bill. And it is basically a groundbreaking labor rights bill that could empower workers by letting the state step in when the federal government fails to protect rights, their rights to organize, or just their general labor rights overall. It's a bold response to, you know, decades of union busting and federal inaction, and it might just set the stage for a new era in worker power localized within the states. So the full name of it is California Assembly Bill 288. And the overall, you know, the big picture of it is that it expands California's Public Employee Relations Board, or PERB, P-E-R-B. It expands the jurisdiction of PERB so that workers in the private sector, especially those that are covered under the National Labor Relations Act, have a state backstop when the federal government, you know, specifically the National Labor Relations Board, is unable or unwilling to enforce their organizing rights in a timely or effective manner. The bill has passed both houses of the California legislature, passing by an overwhelming assembly vote of 68-2 on June 2nd of this year. And then on September 9th of this year, the Senate amendments were concurred in. So the bill is in what they call engrossing and enrolling stage, which basically means that it's in its final steps before it goes to the desk of Governor Gavin Newsom for his signature. And the bill also has support from, you know, not only just from individual workers, but from major labor unions in the state, you know, most specifically the Teamsters and the California Federation of Labor Unions. And they are strongly backing it. And they have called, both of those unions have called on the governor to go ahead and sign this bill once it does reach his desk. And, you know, given everything that has been going on between Governor Newsom and the White House, it seems like a pretty no-brainer that he would go ahead and sign this right away, kind of. You know, at the very least, you know, even if he doesn't support the legislation itself, as kind of a way to thumb his nose at the White House. So just to explain what the bill actually does, it essentially allows workers who are subject to the National Labor Relations Act as of January 1st of 2025, and who have, you know, workers who have filed petitions or unfair labor practice charges with the National Labor Relations Board or the NLRB, but have not received a remedy within 6 months from the National Board. This petition essentially allows them to petition the PERB, or the California State Labor Board, petition them to step in and basically do the work of the NLRB on their behalf. You know, at that point, once it has reached the time limit, which is 6 months of inaction from the labor board at the federal level, the state labor board could investigate unfair labor practice charges. And order appropriate remedies, you know, which could include reinstatement to back to the, you know, if a worker's been fired illegally, reinstatement. You could also allow them to receive back pay for wage theft or wages they were denied during the period that their complaint happened and they were waiting. Or even, you know, they could bring civil penalties against the employer in the same way that the NLRB would do, but basically doing the work of the National Labor Board but on behalf of the worker and doing it for the state level. It also basically allows for, you know, to strengthen the worker side of the equation between employer and employee, because delays, you know, when there are delays in action from the labor board, it essentially weakens the collective bargaining power of workers. And so then this, you know, this bill would mean that the justice delayed is less likely to become justice denied. And so basically it is just, instead of allowing these workers to toil there and wait for a labor board on the federal level that is never going to come and help them, this says, okay, you've been waiting long enough, therefore we are going to step in and do the work of the federal government on your behalf. And it could, you know, as a result of this, it could also incentivize employers to comply with the labor board sooner. Or to meet the worker where, you know, at their complaint sooner, because oftentimes, you know, you see that corporations and employers gamble on the delay or, you know, legal stalling that might come from a labor complaint. They gamble that is actually just going to play out long enough that they can continue to exploit the worker and really see no justice delivered. Mm-hmm. And so that is a gamble that they take often and sadly win often. And so especially when you have federal government that is going to just let them sit there and spin their wheels. The state is going to step in and act, is what it seems to be.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say too, you know, we have talked so much like ad nauseum on this show about how the executive branch obviously has so much control on the how a law is executed, you know, whether that's through executive orders or appointments and things like that. But more recently, we've been talking about it so much in the case of laws just not getting executed or getting ignored, right? Because a president comes in and appoints people who, you know, for example, don't believe in things like federal education programs, right, or things like that, right? So, I mean, I think this is an incredible idea, depending on how the execution goes. You know, I could change on that, but like philosophically, yeah, I am very aligned to it. And what's very funny about such a liberal state like California is this really feels like a very Republican small government bill, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be funny to see kind of the reception there of saying like, oh, well, clearly they're taking this stuff into their own hands. Yeah. I am very curious to see how this goes because again, I, to your point, I think backstop is a great word.
Yeah.
Against an executive branch member coming in and basically not enforcing laws that have been passed.
Right. That's a really good like way to look at it too, because yeah, it's essentially a states' rights bill, which traditionally has been the domain of Republicans.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, you're right. So this is a pretty ingenious way to go in through the back door in a way to basically be like, yeah, we are, you know, we liberals are interested in enforcing more states' rights, you know, taking things away from the federal government, allowing the states to do it.
Well, I think it's states' rights done in a way where, you know, myself, obviously we don't get too much into our own political stuff here, but, you know, myself believing in institutions, yeah, and government and the idea behind it. The reason I kind of like this balance is, well, you're executing things that have been passed by the people at the federal level.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it is states' rights, but it's also kind of more of an execution side of it, which, yeah, I think is interesting.
But like, yeah, just as a rhetorical means to be like, well, you couldn't possibly, Republicans, be against this. Yeah. It is exact right up your alley. It's allowing the states to have more power over themselves and less, you know, power in the federal government, which, of course, now everything has been flipped on its head when you have, well, you know, what is essentially a authoritarian executive branch.
Yeah.
That is being supported wholeheartedly by the Republican Party across the country.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into the bill more. Yeah. I mean, I do think you can get into some weirdness with this where, you know, if the NLRB is doing its job properly, I do think this can get a little bit squirrely because, mm-hmm, it's like, well, okay, what if we disagree? Because you're opening the door for that. But,
right,
but, you know, if this is more used to say like, oh, you're just not taking action, you know, hey, we're going to follow up on kind of clear-cut cases, which a lot of these are.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting. But again, it can't, you're introducing some squirreliness, I think, to the process for sure.
Certainly. Yeah. And it really is a remedy in a moment where it's very clear that the control of the Federal Labor Board is going to be under the hands of conservatives for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. And so it is, yeah, as it said earlier, like a backstop to prevent them from just complete inaction and letting workers fall through the cracks.
Completely agreed. The other thing that I would also like to call out here is that, you know, you mentioned that they can drag their feet in order to punish the unions, but I think they all can also drag their feet to punish workers themselves, right? If you have been fired for organizing from somewhere and you still have a life, right? You know, and it takes a year and a half for the NLRB to take action. Your life goes on. It doesn't just pause, yeah, right? You've been dismissed. You've had these sort of different things happen to you. And, you know, depending on the economy, it can be tough, right? So, you know, you mentioned reinstatement as an example. I think it is the right of states, or not the right of states, it is the requirement of state governments to protect its people, right? And so I think that's a really awesome use case for this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, because as you said, these workers are going to be in limbo regardless,
for so long.
This process takes, yeah, so long. And if the federal government is just going to completely ignore them, it's going to hurt the state. It's going to hurt, yeah, the state's economy if this worker is not being, you know, if they aren't getting the remedy they need.
Well, and to be clear too, you know, there's feet dragging that can happen at the corporate level, but then there's also just the quote unquote feet dragging of like bureaucracy.
Right.
And you know, technically, that's in order to get things right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, things can look a certain way and then you investigate. Right. So, you know, there's two different parts of it.
Right.
I don't always begrudge the bureaucracy of it. I feel like as you get older, you kind of go, okay, these things are here for a reason.
Right.
And, you know, it's not great, but also, you know, you got to get things right, you know, and I we just saw this with Elon. Hey, let's speed this process up. It doesn't always work that way. So, you know, there's two different types of feet dragging, I guess, is the only quantify
yeah.
I would do there.
And it's like there's a difference between feet dragging and just the gears of bureaucracy turning slowly.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think, and actually that's a great point to bring up, because one of the elements of what this bill would do is essentially to expand the rank, you know, the ranks of this of the state labor board, you know, so allows them, it increases their funding and allows them to hire more people and basically acquire more resources, so that when taking on this new caseload, you know, if inevitably these things continue to fall through the cracks of the federal government and land on the state's desk, they now have the resources and the worker power to actually take these cases on and not have it grind everything to a halt because they are overwhelmed by the caseload coming to them. Mm-hmm. So that is, you're right. So the bill itself actually even directly addresses the bureaucratic feet dragging that is inevitable when you have, you know, the gears of bureaucracy grinding like that. Another thing that the bill allows would allow for is for the state board to certify unions, to recognize representative status, and order first contracts in certain cases when the federal enforcement branch is just not, is absent, or, you know, just working too slowly. And, you know, many union efforts in the private sector are often frustrated by employer retaliation combined with federal inaction. And so this gives unions and laborers, you know, laborers in general, more tools to combat that retaliation when trying to form a union. The coverage, you know, if which is seems to be the inevitable thing here, if the National Labor Relations Act itself is if that coverage is narrowed, you know, likely due to the federal government dismantling it altogether, or through, you know, legally hamstringing what the federal labor board can do, or, you know, just policy
just not
shifts.
Executing it
exactly, yeah,
yeah.
Then, you know, worker is not covered under, you know, or the worker then is not covered under these protections. This basically allows PERB, the state board, to step in and do everything that the federal government was going to do for them, but at the state level here.
Now, if you guys remember, Prop 22, which was passed in 2020 in California, was specifically about gig economy workers being restricted from gaining full employment status and instead being basically contractors of companies like Lyft and Uber. To be very clear, the NLRA and in turn the NLRB is focused on employees designated as such. So this act, or sorry, this law would in fact not allow California to better address some of the Prop 22 issues that have cropped up. You know, we haven't reported on it here, but other people have, along the side of things of like, you know, part of that bill included increases in per mile pay based on inflation rates. There was also money to be paid out for health insurance for on the job injuries, things like that. There have been hundreds of reports of companies in California, specifically Uber and Lyft, not following those.
Right.
So again, an execution issue that now with our current kind of situation in the executive branch is not attacking. And, you know, I don't even think it's unclear. I think it's just straight up this act would not allow California to do anything about that.
Yeah, like the hope, I guess, could be that given the building out of this labor board and you know, showing, flexing its muscle and realizing how effective this policy, you know, the allowing the state board to act on behalf of the federal labor board, how effective that is, it may then inspire future legislation that allows it to deal with, you know, contractor issues. But you're right, as of now, this does not fill that giant hole that exists for, you know, non-employees.
Especially when they're strictly defined by the state, right? I think, you know, that we have seen cases of the NLRB getting involved with like, hey, you have broken what a contractor looks like and you should be an employee and you're not.
Yeah.
But in this case, right, like there's an existing proposition that is stating that they are not.
It's very clear.
So, yeah. So, it, you know, it's just not, it's very black and white.
Yeah. And so that is an unfortunate, you know, missed blind spot of this legislation. But of course, it is only because there was such a massive thing that was passed just a few years ago that very clearly defined this.
But I think to your point, it paves the way for, you know, if this is successful at protecting California workers, you know, maybe they take a look back at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a definite hope of where this could be heading. Just quickly, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Labor Radio here on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. We'll be right back to our discussion in just a moment, but first I want to drop a quick reminder that KBOO is in the last week of our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, focusing on uplifting community voices and letting the silenced be heard. We only have a few days left to reach our $45,000 fundraising goal, so please consider showing your support. Become a member today at kboo.fm/give, or if you're using the KBOO mobile app, just click the big donate button. Thank you so much for supporting Community Powered Radio, and we'll now get back to our discussion here. So although the bill is likely to face serious challenges during implementation, some of these will not just be obstacles, but, you know, things that can be organized around, just, you know, to ensure good implementation, to defend it in court, and to push for broader protections, like we were just talking about with expanding it to, you know, potentially encompass contract workers. So, you know, the Supreme Court has held that any conduct that is, quote, arguably protected or prohibited, end quote, by the National Labor Relations Act may only be regulated by the federal government. So state laws that try to regulate the same conduct may be preempted by the federal government. Now, AB 288 attempts to navigate this by limiting state action to situations where the NLRB has delayed or declined jurisdiction. But whether that limitation is enough is untested. And of course, with the Supreme Court as it is being, you know, so incredibly right-wing and also very like employer-friendly, I could imagine a situation where they absolutely do try and test it or find some, you know, small loophole to say that this, that it's overstepping its bounds. You know, there is, of course, on top of that, the potential for a preemptive strike by businesses. So employers and business-friendly organizations may file lawsuits to block the state jurisdiction, and they may argue that state laws interfere with federal regulatory, with the federal regulatory regime, which, you know, would kind of go hand in hand with the Supreme Court being rather right-wing and siding with employers that a challenge from major corporations in the state of California would go to the Supreme Court and, you know, get their support on that. It would be pretty rich, you know, just rhetorically,
yeah,
that they would say that, you know, they're interfering with the regulatory regime of the federal government when they are also actively dismantling the regulatory regime. But hypocrisy doesn't mean anything anymore, so there's no shame here.
Well, and also the states' rights part of it, which we kind of already touched on. But I mean, it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's, of course, the even with the law in place, the state board, the PERB, needs to increase its capacity, you know, staffing, budgeting, enforcement powers and stuff to actually act quickly. So on top of all of the potential legal challenges, there is also the implementation challenge of this, because it requires the political will to defend the law and to enact it appropriately, you know. So to actually, once it's passed by the legislature, it then requires that the state government does actually appropriate the funds properly and hire the necessary workforce properly and all these things. So there are plenty of things that could you know, hamstring this. But AB 288 does include provisions for a, quote, PERB enforcement fund, end quote, which is paid by civil penalties plus legislative appropriation. So it has been written into the bill to make sure that it is funded properly and rolled out properly. But, you know, there's always potential for shenanigans there when it's handed over to lawmakers. So, you know, there is a growing trend among pro-labor states to enact what some call trigger legislation or, you know, state labor courts, just as what we're talking about here with California, that expand the jurisdiction for state labor boards in periods of federal inaction or where federal protections just might be totally rolled back. So along with California, which is at this point the most out ahead of every other state, unsurprisingly, we also see a very similar piece of legislation going through the state Congress in the state of New York. So, you know, kind of the two biggest states in the country and the two biggest, like, Democratic controlled states are, you know, walking hand in hand,
yeah,
in the same direction to allow worker protections at a state level to make up for the federal government. And then, of course, unsurprisingly, on top of that, you have Massachusetts, which is a bastion of, you know, liberal democracy in this country. And they are currently, there is a piece of legislation that would do basically the same thing that is still under debate at this moment. But it does seem like that's the kind of thing that, especially if California does enact it and New York enacts it, I could see the Massachusetts Congress doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem like this is a trend that's happening where you're just moving in this direction where states are recognizing, especially the more liberal, like Democratic controlled states, recognizing that they need to act and fill in the gaps where the federal government is just completely unwilling to act at this point.
Yeah. You know, and we typically don't get into a ton of like political strategy or things like that. You know, and I'm sure we fail a lot to be unbiased and opinionated. But sure, I guess my commentary here would be welcome to the game, people. Mm-hmm. Like it's nice to see you.
Yeah. It is it's great to see them waking up and actually doing something. It's only been 8-9 months at this point, you know, but at least we're finally, you know, bow off our back heels and, mm-hmm. and taking action. And it would be great, you know, here in Oregon to see the same thing happen here and, you know, in our neighboring state of Washington, to see just a true, like, worker-friendly blue wall on the West Coast. And it seems like the, you know, the Northeast is doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, as much as everything has been falling apart, there has been some positive steps. You know, you saw an alliance made by the West Coast states on healthcare policy.
Yeah.
And so to see more cooperation among, you know, the states that are truly forward, like progressive, to just counteract all the things that are coming or being destroyed by the federal government when it comes to worker protections or health and all these other things that are basic rights.
Exactly. Well, you know, and obviously I think, you know, people have so many opinions on states' rights versus federal government. I think, you know, where we come down is just that anything that's going to provide people additional rights is something we're in favor for.
Yes.
And something that is going to strip rights away, we're not, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, and I think that's where kind of the dividing line is, hey, are we using states' rights to further some sort of an agenda, or are we using states' rights to protect rights that have been around for, you know, at this point, you know, like 80 years?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I think, at least personally, I fall on this kind of tough situation, right? Because I mean, states and federal, it is not an easy thing.
No.
But again, if you're trying to protect or increase people's rights, it's not a tough sell for me.
I think that's a really good point. Because yeah, like as we talked about at the beginning of the show, like we are basically in an upside down moment where like the states' rights agenda has now flipped to being a left wing idea versus a right wing idea. But whereas the right wing version of it was always states' rights to restrict people's ability to do things or people's rights within those states. The left-wing version of it is states' rights to protect people's rights and to expand.
Yeah, to codify stuff that's already existed, exactly. Right? Whether that's Roe v. Wade or whether in this case, right, like people just not executing against laws that are actually already live.
Yeah. No, and so like hopefully we, as we were saying, hopefully we see just more of this as the federal government just starts abdicating all of its responsibilities to, you know, protect and help people. But yeah, this is a great step in the right direction. You know, if similar laws survive legal challenges and work as intended, we may see a shift towards more decentralized enforcement of labor rights as states start filling in the gap. And then that can move beyond just labor rights. It can move to all rights. The state, you know, states just filling in the gap for where the federal government has just completely failed. So for many labor advocates, this, you know, is historic. It's a historic moment. AB 288 is being hailed by unions as one of the most significant labor legislations passed since the NLRA was passed back in 1935.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, unfortunately, we are out of time here. We will absolutely keep up on this story and update you next month as things develop. But thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ilya Gilliland.
Have a great evening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello, I'm Scott King.
And I'm Joe Tursty.
We host the KBOO podcast, the King Tercy Music Hour. Every month, we upload a new show to our KBOO website. We currently have over 80 shows available for you to listen and enjoy.
Each of our shows is based on a different theme. Enjoy great music as well as our discussion of the songs and artists. Our show is rock, soul, and blues based, but you might hear anything, including country, jazz, and classical.
The easiest way to find us is to simply enter King Tercy Music Hour into your web browser and select it with the KBOO FM extension. That's King, K-I-N-G, Tercy, T-U-R-S-I, Music Hour.
While you're there, check out our wide variety of shows. We've got shows on social issues, musical themes, people, the holidays, and so much more.
That's the King Tercy Music Hour on KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts O.B. Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African-American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If some